Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Sheila.
You've been away from it for too long, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, I've been, yes. Well, it's been, yes. Well, I had a good week off.
Oh, no, and that's great. Nobody's complaining. I'm just saying, you forgot your name's Dr. Redmond.
What did I say?
Dr. Sheila.
No, I didn't say that.
Well, you know what? We can check the tape later. But
anyway. Yeah. Anyway, it's Dr. Redmond here. I had a good week.
Darn right you did. But yes, we are here to talk Criminal Minds Season 8, 16 to 18, which includes a sequel episode. And I'm not talking about the normal let's follow up on the replicator storyline. Which... oh, that's a hit and miss episode right there. But no, an actual, you know, no fooling sequel. So let's get right to it.
Okay, so the first one we're going to do is... okay, wait, what were you doing? 16, copycat. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, when two Philadelphia, Pennsylvania nurses are found exsanguinated with their eyelids removed, the BAU suspects the crimes were committed by the replicator and sets out to prevent him from striking again. Meanwhile, Blake struggles with her personal demons after learning Strauss wants to make amends for her past actions.
Aww. I guess if there's one thing that this season teaches us is, I guess, don't bother going through AA and doing the amends stuff, because you're going to get murdered by Mark Hamill anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Spoiler alert. Yeah, that's what happens. But no, she tries to do the thing here. And it's interesting, because the episode starts right off with the little visit with her, and we find out the backstory, which is that... Alex was one of the many people who framed the wrong guy in the Amerithrax case.
Yeah.
And she feels she wasn't really involved in the framing and she only did good work, but she's one of the people who got hung out to dry and the whole thing was blamed on to protect people like Aaron who were more responsible for it. Mm-hmm. That is the backstory we learn. It'd be great if... this is going to be what the entire plot of the last episode revolves around. So it'd be great if we had found out about this more than 8 episodes before the end of the season. But we don't, which is too bad. This is also the episode where we find out that it was the replicator who made the Zugzwang phone call. Which is really questionable because, again, as you said when we were talking about this, it seems like something they figured out later, because they try to say in this episode he must have been stalking you and knew what you know phone to call. But if they were that paranoid, he and Maeve in their phone calls, he wouldn't have ever gone to the same phone booth twice.
Yeah, and he was always, it seems that he was always in a phone booth that he could see 360 degrees around him.
Exactly. So it's like, there's no way the guy could have found out that phone's number. And the thing is, he gets the call back after he tries to call Maeve. So, like we said, he wouldn't have had to have just been stalking Reed. He would have been stalking Reed so intensely that he knew every detail about the Maeve situation, including the phone number that, you know, Reed was dialing from random payphones. Like, that is a ridiculous, unbelievable amount of legwork for this man to have done. But we're just supposed to accept it, so let's move on.
Oh. No, this was a man who actually knew how to do astral
projection. Yes.
Astral project him and split himself into different pieces so that he could astrally project himself.
There you go.
Among all of the members of the cast.
Because, he does seem to be doing some amazing work.
Well, he seems to be there at just a critical time.
Yeah, every time someone's having a critical event, he's always there.
Yes, and that can only happen.
Yeah. What? No, but what I, one of my favorite things, right, is there's this
God, that would have been funny.
I know. There's this great scene where they're looking at the photographs that the replicator has taken, and one of them is Alex watching Reed's baseball game, or I guess softball game, right? Watching the softball game. And what's funny is they're like, look at this picture. She's wearing sunglasses. We can kind of see someone taking a picture in the reflection of the sunglasses. But I'm like, do you know how close he would have to have been standing for you to be able to see someone taking a picture in her sunglasses? He would have had to been like 10 feet away from her or less. And I'm sure the person who took that camera for that shot on the day actually was 10 feet away. But it's like, yeah, you would notice someone pointing a camera directly at you from 10 feet away. It's just crazy. And then you get the, but then we get the actual mystery this week, which is a guy is killing nurses, and cutting their eyes off and removing their blood. And it turns, and they're led to, because it's similar to the artist murder from, that we covered very recently, they assume it is the replicator, but in fact, it is not replicator. It is a man who the replicator has convinced to become a serial killer.
Yeah.
So yeah. As a consequence, it is quite a weird episode. And their sloppiness gets a man killed, so lets a man kill himself. So that's good, because they're too sloppy to do their jobs correctly. He's able to kill himself later, which is a little weird. And yeah, my question is, like, this is one of those things where I hate to be in any way in favor of Mr. Scratch, who we're going to be talking about in, you know, 16, 17 episodes. But at least they do, like, the legwork to say that he is a, you know, preposterously good hypnotist to explain how he's able to get to do things. Because it's like, I don't understand the intermediary scenes where he talks this guy, A, into committing serial crimes in a specific way using this specific MO, and B, how he talks him into killing himself. Like, I just don't get any of that. Did it make any sense to you?
Well, I'm going to be really, really honest here.
Okay.
I watched these on Tuesday. Now, that's not very long ago.
But you've completely forgotten every detail of all three episodes?
No, not all three episodes. But this one, I'm having a hard time. Like, I'm going, as you're talking, I'm starting to get the visuals, so I am remembering. But I'm going, Yeah. It's not coming back. The Aaron and the Blake thing and the Zug Zwang thing. Yes. Oh, yes. I'd forgotten that was in this one.
That's in this. Yeah. Because it's such an inessential episode.
You know, and then it turns out, you know, that they find the replicator. I did remember that. So they end up in the replicator's room.
Yeah. Where he's left all of the stuff for them to see.
Yeah. He's left all the stuff for them to see and he's not there. So he's just yanking their chain one more time.
Yeah.
Does it make any sense? No, because I don't know how you would ever persuade someone to do that.
Yeah.
When it doesn't seem like, yeah, I.
Because especially specific. Because the crazy part is, when did his trying to talk this guy into murdering started? Because we find out that this guy's wife left him, right? 6 months ago, and presumably that's when he started ramping up to serial killing. So, like, at what point did the replicator discover this guy was on the edge and ready to start serial killing, and start putting the moves on him to encourage him to start serial killing, and also get so much trust that he was able to get him to start serial killing in a specific way, at his orders, and even deliver him the eyelids? Like, all the stuff this guy does for the Replicator. It's quite an extreme level of devotion to the Replicator. A man who, how long ago could he have possibly met?
Yeah. Puzzling,
right?
As I said, this one didn't even sort of sink in. And I didn't want to watch it. I was debating watching it a third time today. And then I thought, no, I'm not going to. If it was that, I am not watching it again. But as you're talking, yes, and they catch this guy. Relatively early in the episode. And yes, and then he makes his phone call and the Replicator tells him to kill himself, clearly.
Oh, yeah.
And why the hell they let him make his phone call, I don't know, because...
Well, yeah, they like, I want to talk to a lawyer. Yeah, well, when you want to talk to a lawyer, you know, in real life, the cops don't just give you a phone and let you call whoever, right? They get the number of the lawyer, and they call the lawyer for you. They don't just give you a phone. Like, you remember that scene in Manhunter where they give him a phone without numbers on it?
Yeah.
Because they don't just let you, like, well, we can't listen on this call. It's going to be with his attorney. Well, no, you turn off the listening when you've confirmed that he's calling his attorney. What if he's calling his accomplice and saying, kill the woman you've got locked up?
Yeah.
You don't let, you don't let a guy just make a phone call.
Because he's talking to his lawyer and it has to be a private phone call.
Yes. And that's the thing. It's like, I understand that once his lawyer is on the line, yeah, you give him the room and you leave him alone with the phone. That's fine. But you don't just leave him alone in the room with the phone.
Yes, well, yeah, but maybe they're basing that particular scene on 1940s movies or something, you know?
Something like that.
Where, it's like, you know?
Leaving him alone with a phone and a bottle of pills? Like, what are you doing? You're so
Well,
bad
he needed
at this.
To kill himself, so they had to...
Yeah, I know. The plot requires him to kill himself.
Kill himself, so they have to do something stupid.
Yeah, they have to do something incredibly stupid. And by the way, I hope you noticed, like, how hard, like, how terrible the FBI looks in this episode and how hard they try to make it not look terrible. Because these guys, the FBI, ruined this guy's life.
Oh, yeah.
They did. They said he did it. He was jailed for weeks until they got DNA test results that proved that he wasn't the rapist murderer they were looking for.
Yeah.
And there was no public exoneration of him. And the crazy part is he's like, there's this weird scene where they try to make it look like it wasn't the FBI's fault. Because it's like, how did his name get out? How did his name get out? He was arrested. It's not like in a previous episode they had talked about how, like, names can leak when people are suspects but not arrested, and it can ruin their life, and that's true. Like, if people are, it is known that you're a person of interest, it can ruin your life, whether you did it or not, right? But this isn't a person of interest, the cops leak something to the press situation, even though they make it sound like that. The FBI said, go arrest this guy. The cops went and arrested this guy. Guess what? That arrest is part of the public record.
Yeah. What did Joe do something stupid this episode?
I know, what a shock, right?
yeah, I was just going. I seem
how
to
off brand recall. For him.
Yeah, how off brand for him to somehow or another manage not to allow the FBI to take any responsibility for what happened to this guy.
But yeah, because they try to throw in that line where it's like, probably some cop told the press. No, no cop told the press. Mm. It's a public record that this man has been arrested.
I remember. I now remember.
You now remember that line. Okay.
I remember that sort of, that whole
that part whole of the episode.
Thing.
Yeah.
No, I'm starting, you know, the episode comes back to me. But
okay, good.
As we're talking away. But yeah, no, it's just, no, when you make mistakes, Joe, own up.
Yeah.
Couldn't you, why couldn't somebody have written the lines, yeah, look, we're really, really sorry.
We're sorry. That doesn't give you the right to murder these innocent women.
How come? Yeah, that's right. You know, we're sorry we screwed up your life royally. What I don't understand is why the frig he hadn't sued some.
That's crazy.
Find him, and he hadn't sued.
Sued the FBI. A, sued the guys who gave him brain damage because the FBI had identified, like, both the guys who gave him brain damage and the FBI. This man has gotten brain damage because the FBI announced that he committed a crime that he was innocent of.
Yeah.
Do you know what Richard Jewell got when the FBI did that to him?
Yeah.
He got himself a ton of money.
And this is 2013.
Yeah.
So why a lawyer?
I mean, this all happened to him like back in 2003, but still a lawyer.
No, 2003. I'm sorry. They were still suing.
You're right. They were. Well, no, but look again, Richard Jewell, 1996.
Yeah.
He got a hell of a lot of money out of the government and out of the news because they framed him. They didn't frame him. They just incorrectly identified him and persecuted him.
Yeah. And this is basically what happened here.
What happened here, except in addition to everything else, this guy also got brain damage from being beaten up because they went public with his name and said he's the guy.
Yeah, like, I do not understand why
you're right. How, no, a lawyer would have come to him and he would have sued and he would have made a ton of money off of this.
As I would say, there must have been ambulance chasing lawyers in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, because that's how the FBI would.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, no, you're totally right. They absolutely
even in 2003, when this happened, I am absolutely shocked that they didn't just cut their losses and just give him a hunk of money right off the top and say, you know, we're sorry. This is it. Don't sue us. And here's a few million dollars.
Yeah.
And hopefully you will get better.
Yeah. No, you know? I mean, I honestly believe they would have.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's a whole bunch.
Well, I mean, when the FBI shot that guy in the face because they thought it was a bank robber, like, he got millions and millions of dollars from the government. And what happened to this guy is no less awful. And let's not forget Richard Jewell. Like, it's a tragic story. He was completely exonerated. He's now remembered to be a hero, but he died like 10 years later. And a lot of people, like his family believes, I was going to say a lot of people in the generic way, but specifically his family says that his health never really recovered from the extreme stress placed on him by the FBI.
Yeah.
You know, and did you know Clint Eastwood's making a movie about him?
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
that's
good.
His new movie. I'm very interested to see that. Clint Eastwood hasn't made a lot of great movies lately, but I'm very interested to see what he has to say about Richard Jewell.
I don't know. Clint Eastwood is so interesting. No, we could do a whole...
About his oeuvre? Yeah, we absolutely could.
Yeah, maybe we'll do a podcast about Clint Eastwood afterwards. Start with his beginning and his politics and
his fascinating career.
Yeah.
It really is. But yeah, so this episode, I think that's the problem with this episode is fundamentally you have to believe that he would have sued them and made a ton of money, which probably it would have made it so he wouldn't have to keep doing backbreaking work he wasn't good at and that he couldn't do because of the brain injury anymore. His family still might have broken up, but I don't really see this guy. And the weird part is it actually fits in the episode a little better. Because they want to suspect him of being the replicator, right? Well, if this guy had gotten a 7-figure settlement from the federal government and not been working anymore, he actually would have had the time and resources to be the replicator. You know? Like, because think about it. Being the replicator is a full-time job.
Yep.
So, like, if they had added in that detail that this guy and you could actually make a statement about the kind of brain injury he received, that it's, you know, destroyed his impulse control and he can't stop his violent revenge fantasies. So even though he got the millions of dollars from the government, his life was still irrevocably destroyed by what the FBI did. And he's become violent. His wife and leaves him and takes the daughters and takes half of the money they have left. And he gets all resentful and super angry and then turns to fantasies of violence, and because he's got this brain damage, he can't not do commit the violence. Like, weirdly, your observation about the ambulance chasers not only fixes the episode, it makes it more realistic without changing any of the plot details of the episode. And the crazy part is, a giant news story about this guy getting this big payment and still being resentful about the FBI would have given you a good reason for the replicator to want to track him down and start chatting with him, because here's another guy who famously hates the FBI and was screwed over by them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, yeah. Well, I would say thank you.
No, I think you nailed it. I think your rewrite of this episode, because we're expected to believe, yeah, right? We're expected to believe, yeah, that's the replicator just dug out this obscure case of the FBI and, you know, convinced him to work with him. But it works so much better if he did get the settlement, because it adds so much of a layer to, no, the FBI screwed up so badly that even paying this guy off didn't fix the problem. His life was still ruined. And with the brain damage, he turned into a violent person. Like, that's such an interesting premise. And now that we're talking about it, I'm genuinely sad the show didn't think to do that.
Well,
damn.
Well, yes, but of course we all have to remember that the FBI is supposed to be above reproach. So
I know. They're incapable of doing anything wrong. I'm familiar with how the FBI works.
Even when they do something terribly wrong like this. Like it's
hey, speaking of the FBI doing things terribly wrong, would you like to move on to the next episode? You gave me the perfect segue. I'm sorry if you had more to say about this episode.
Nah.
I loved that segue so much.
Okay, The Gathering. With the replicator case declared inactive, the BAU sets out to track down a serial killer targeting St. Paul, Minnesota women who document their personal lives and their inner fantasies on social media sites. Meanwhile, Garcia suspects Kevin is jealous of her new love interest after introducing them to each other. Oh, God.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but that can wait. Let's focus on the actual plot. So first off, the replicator stuff. Is there a funnier moment in this show than Aaron telling the team, he hasn't killed anybody for a whole week? We can't keep putting wasting resources on this prolific serial killer who's attacking the FBI. Like,
because all your other cases are
piling up.
Done.
Like, come on. It seems to be operating in this world that this show does way too often, where they're under the impression that only 8 people work at the FBI.
Well, no, that work in the BAU.
Yeah, well, but no, even still, like, you don't need the BAU to find the replicator. You just need a full... Oh, no, I guess you do, because he'll never get caught. Yes.
No, if you don't put your most elite team on this case, he'll never get caught. And your most elite team, there's 2 issues here. Number one, yeah, you get the idea that these are the only profilers in the entire FBI. That's number one.
And where's Sam?
We've had 8.5 years of these people are the only ones that can do this.
I know.
Right? And then the other thing is, well, why can't you dump your other cases then if the replicator your other cases on the regular
on the rest
FBI.
Of the FBI. Exactly. Like, you it's know, not that complicated.
It's just, well, yeah. But, you know, I mean, give me. Yeah, it was the funniest thing at the beginning, and you're going, no, I'll back you, but and then Hodge, no, we're still going to do this, but you know,
I know we got to keep it under wraps. We got to like this.
Oh
is...
yeah, sure. Like you're gonna, you know, yeah.
Just
now
just like you
gonna...
kept chasing Frank. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like you just still kept chasing.
Yeah, you know, we're going to find you, meaning I'm not going to think about or mention this until he kills my girlfriend 9 episodes from now.
Yeah.
Well, what's so crazy about it to me, right, as I watch this episode, is as the episode starts, you're like, they're going through the evidence, and no one is saying that it's like, there's a very small list of people, right, who could have conceivably had access because to all of the files, almost no one. could have access, because the thing is, it's not like he's replicating all the crimes perfectly. Like, someone in the press, right, could be good at getting information. Yes, someone at the press could be. Actually, one of the stupidest lines in the episode is,
oh yeah,
is like, someone in the press. No, if it was someone in the press, they would have written about it, and we'd be able to cat, like, so you're saying a guy who got all this secret information specifically to create crimes attacking you guys would also have written up news stories about it?
I don't think so.
That's insane, but the press isn't even a good example, because you would be able to call up all of the cops who worked on the case, and they would all have been in touch with the same national reporter. So of course it can't be a member of the press. It can only be a member of federal law enforcement. And it's painfully obvious that that is the only way they could conceivably. And then, well, our files haven't been hacked. Well, if it hasn't been hacked, then it's someone who just has access to it. And so you've narrowed it down even further.
Yes, we can do a profile of the members of the FBI who have access to this information.
Yeah. Look at all of the people who have had access to all of this information. And boom, there's your answer. That's who did it. And by the way, in 6 weeks, that is who they find out who did it.
Yeah. I mean, like, we already know because we've watched
we've
the
seen
entire
it, but,
thing.
But the only question is, no, but the only question is, it doesn't matter what his motive is. It doesn't matter what his history with the team is. That's not a good lead. They keep talking, if we can figure out why he's doing it, we'll catch him. No, the only lead you know need to know is, how does he have access to all of the crime scene photos? Because that's all you need to know to catch this guy, is to figure out how he has access to all the crime scene photos. The minute you find that out, because it's not just, as we find out, it's not just crime scene photos, it's specific details of the kinds of injuries they received. So he's reading full autopsy reports as well. Like, that is such incredibly specialized information that maybe 20 people in the world have it. And then it turns out that one of the 20 people in the world is a guy who hates the woman who's in charge of this team? It's not a hard case to solve, and it really bothers me that we're expected to believe that they spent a week poring over these files and it never occurred to them, well, let's just check who has access to these files. Although, you know, the point you're always making about FBI infallibility?
Yeah.
It's entirely possible that it didn't for a second occur to them that an FBI agent could be doing this.
Yeah, yeah. As you know, as we saw Joel last episode, right?
Yeah.
But we already, you know, I mean, it was just so insane.
Yes, it was.
You know, following this. Well, I mean, as we always say, season 8 is where so many people I know stopped watching.
Yeah.
And they haven't done what we've done, right? They just start to lose interest, sort of,
yeah.
Right? And, you know.
And we're putting in the work to say, well, why has the show gotten worse? How has the show gotten worse? And the thing is, they're phoning it in so much. They're putting so much less work into the scripts this year. And so many people just, I think, whether or not they were doing the work in their own heads of figuring exactly why they didn't like the show anymore, people were just bouncing off the show suddenly.
Yeah. You know? I would think, well, yeah. And that does happen. I mean, it's just like when we watched Lost.
Yes.
That's the classic. You watch Lost. And then season, what, three or season
three?
Whatever,
is when
right?
Like, three is the last season that's kind of okay. And then you get out of season three and you're just like, what are they even doing?
Like, I started to watch it and I just went, oh, this isn't worth my time anymore.
Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, and I didn't bother to sit down really and do an awful lot. They just made these shifts now. I don't like it. By the way, Michael Emerson is in another show now.
Oh, yay. I love Michael Emerson,
and
as you know.
I don't remember what it was either. The other one.
I'll go to IMDb after this is over and I'll find out what Michael Emerson is up to, because we're big Michael Emerson fans here.
Yes.
Just huge fans. If you haven't listened to our mini series about the show The Inside, go listen to that. We do a whole episode just about Michael Emerson on Pre-Filer.
Yeah, just one episode of
Yeah, we do a whole episode just about him and how perfect that television is. So yeah. let's address the actual plot of the actual episode we watched.
Okay, you can start.
I'll start since I got to jog your memory again. This is another one of those episodes where they make a big deal about the killer being able to get into places, right? And then never explaining, you know, how that happened. They're like, they act like it's going to be part of the story, how he managed to, because like, so they got this woman, right, who she and her brother are murdered, right? And she had invited her brother to stay with her because she knew she was being stalked and she was worried about it, right? And so she has her brother come and stay with her so she'll feel safe, and they end up both getting murdered. And then we find out in the episode that she had was so worried about the fact that she was being stalked, she had a security system put in her house. And then they're like, how did the killer manage to, like, when he broke in through the window? And by the way, in the story about the rape murder fantasy that the guy wrote about her, she would leave a window open in her house, right? In the fantasy, because that would allow him to come and murder her. And it's like, that's how I know you consented to my rape and murder of you, because this window was open, blah, 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 blah. You know, rationalizing sick, yeah, twisted fantasy guys. That's what they do. But this woman knew that she was being stalked and was freaked out about it, and had, in the past couple of weeks, had a security system installed. So how did the guy get through the window without setting off the alarm in the security system she just had installed because she knew about the stalking? And it's one of those things where it's like, and also, it's Minnesota and it's the dead of winter. Why, like, even if there wasn't a security system, why would there be an unlocked window at all?
Yeah, and why wouldn't there be footprints in the snow?
Yeah, stuff like, way to track the guy. Like,
you know, like, it's weird. It's weird, as you say. This is Minnesota.
It's Minnesota.
This is St. Paul, Minnesota in the winter. Yeah. And you just kind of go, okay, don't think about this, right? We watchers. Well, it's funny, you know. I mean, this is another one of those episodes where I go, you know, people probably, you know, they're watching him and they're just going, part of their brain is going, this isn't making any sense. And so they just go, you know, why bother?
Yeah, they just check out. Yeah.
They check out, right? It's all of this, you know. And then you have the guy sitting in his writing group and then realizing what's going on.
Yeah.
But what a weird writing group.
Like, seriously, a serial killer has put together a writing group where people can talk, you know, write their murder fantasies. Like, here's the thing. I can believe that's like, cause they go and they see the guy who's in the asylum, who's doing the online version. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm very naive. And if I am, you can tell me. But, like, I can believe that there is an online group where people go on and share their murder fantasies. And the weird part is, I could even believe that some of these guys would be going to that because they were told that talking about these fantasies and sharing them and such is a good way to keep your fantasies under control. Whether or not that would actually work, I'm not a psychologist. I haven't done any research about this kind of therapy. I don't know if it would work, because they talk to the practitioner of this therapy in the episode, and he's like, well, it only works if you do it a specific way. But my point is, I don't know if I believe that there would ever be a non-online version of that group. Like, I can't believe that these guys who have rape and murder fantasies and want to write them down would all get together in a church rec room once a week. How would that ever happen?
No, this is online fan fiction.
That's
stuff,
what I'm saying. Yeah.
No, here's the thing. But this goes back. This is a rehash of an earlier episode.
Yeah.
Right, where the guy was doing all of those. Remember the bank robbery? It is Criminal Minds.
Yeah, it's like psychodrama. Yeah, psychodrama is what you're talking
about.
Psychodrama
is what it was called. I mean, this is just, you know, going to the psychodrama.
The same kind of art therapy thing. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a form. Well,
No,
first
yeah,
of all,
it's...
No. Okay. No. Like, but this is okay. There are some dangerous therapies out there.
Yes.
And my line is, always has been, and this would be one of them.
Yeah.
That just this idea and the fact that the psychologist who thinks this is a good idea doesn't understand, you know, that or says that, you know, and then goes and tells everybody about it. But of course, there's no money to follow through because you cannot just do this. You can't rip apart these people's lives and then not follow up and walk with them, as I always say, as they are putting their lives back together again. And the essence of, I would say, therapy in the United States and in Canada and in a lot of places is, okay, let's give you 6 weeks of cognitive therapy. Let's give you, you know, this. I mean, it's the psychodrama thing.
Yeah. Right? Let's break you down. Oh, good. You've been broken down. Yeah. Later.
Bye. There's
like, no
more
now
money
it's
in the budget to follow you up.
Now it's time for the 3 years of actually talking you through the stuff you just uncovered. That's what therapy's supposed to be. But you're right. Too often, that's not what therapy is.
We're going to give you some tools, and they can cut all the you. They can bypass all this other stuff. You just write all of this stuff down. I mean, this does go to what we discussed in the inside, right?
Yeah.
About how people, if they write, don't do.
Yes.
Right? But that's as a therapeutic method, like I, you know.
And that said, to be fair, sometimes people both write and do.
Yeah.
It's interesting because BTK famously reams and reams and reams of writing about the fantasies of the murders he was going to commit. And he did a bunch of them.
Yeah.
And when he almost got caught, he then managed to satisfy himself by just doing the writing. And just doing the pictures and just doing the manifestos and stuff. He managed to satisfy himself for a very long time just doing the fantasy part. But the idea that you're going to be cured by doing the writing. No, you're not going to be cured by doing the writing. You may be able to, as BTK did, keep yourself satisfied. But you're not going to get better. And there's a question of whether you can ever get better at all. But if you don't want to remain completely sick about it, you would have to only do this writing, and the show at least does admit that, as part of intensive therapy.
Yes.
But yeah, so instead, the guy just uses it as his way of... I just love that the guy is a serial... guy who wants to be a serial killer, but has no internal life.
Yeah.
So he can't come up with his own murder fantasies. It's such a crazy premise for an episode.
I know. You just sit there.
Come on.
It is a crazy episode. Because I could sort of get angry about some of this other stuff, but probably the mood I'm in today. I can't get too angry. Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when you come off holidays, right?
Yeah, you're not gonna worry about the small stuff today.
Not today, but there are issues within this that
It's funny because it's weird how
people,
oh sorry please
that it's no I was gonna say it's amazing, and how many people. Well, yeah, I mean, willing to sit in a room with a whole bunch of other people.
That's the part I don't believe at all.
No, yeah. What did he do? Give a writing course at a community college? We hear about those things too, right?
Yeah.
Like, if I was to say anything, I can still remember this class I took. This university, I had to take the psych of religion. Course.
Okay.
And they brought somebody, it's part of everything. Like you do sociology of religion, psych of religion, blah, 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 blah.
Gotcha.
So anyway, so I took this in the summer and this guy decided to do Jungian psychology in the class.
Okay.
Basically. He wasn't teaching psychology of religion. What he was doing was trying to do depth psychology therapy, I guess, with everybody. And we were supposed to feed into our archetypes, but I can still remember him sitting in that class and wanting us to sit there and write out. I have to remember the specifics because this actually went because I made a complaint about my mark.
Wow.
The guy never taught at the university again. But it was weird. Like, he's sitting there and he wants us to go off into our deep, dark fantasies and go into the depths of our souls and stuff like this, like, and write stuff out. This was all supposed to be for marks and stuff, and write all of this stuff out. I mean, thinking about this serial killing
Jesus.
Thing, right? But this guy, like, you know, and it was just like, and I'm just like, wait a sec, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, we don't have you and I don't have a therapist-patient relationship here. You're a teacher. I'm not telling you about all of my internal life.
You know, and other people, you know, but people get good, like, I mean, this is how gurus get made, right?
It's not only gurus get made, it's how predators look for victims.
Yeah.
Like, this is exactly the kind of stuff they pull. Like, if you told me got fired for harassing students, I'd be like, yep, completely tracks with everything you just told me.
Well, no, he just got, I do not know how it all ended up,
but he did get axed. Yeah.
Oh yeah. He was only a part-time teacher anyway, but it was just like this. It was completely okay. You can go off to a Jungian school, a Jungian university or whatever they want to call it and study Jung. And of course, post-Jungian. Ism, yeah. And you can do that, and you can set yourself up as a post-Jungian therapist. And please, anybody who's listening, don't. But that's just me.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get stuck in these bizarre archetype things, and that's a whole podcast in itself.
Yes.
But what happens is, yes, but that's what this reminded me of, right?
Yeah.
Was that stupid class that I never really think about, right? But,
And the weird part is, right, and this is how sloppily the show is written. Once again, in our We Rewrite Criminal Minds feature, there's such an easy fix to this, which is what if, right? The whole writers group hadn't been about rape and murder fantasies. So I'll give you an example, right? So I'll tell you how this episode could have worked fine.
Okay, you can rewrite this one.
Oh no, I can do this one very easily.
I did last
so
one.
So we find, you did the last one, I'll take this one. We can actually fix this in a second, and I'll tell you how. So we find out that this guy, used to volunteer for a crisis hotline. Right?
Okay.
He used to volunteer for a crisis hotline, and the guy came in to do a seminar about writing therapy as one of the ways they possibly treat people who are going through crises. That's how we found out about the writing therapy. So if this guy decided, okay, I'll set up a writing workshop, right? I'll set up a writing workshop and I'll use that to fuel my own fantasies. But he didn't set up a murder workshop. He just set up a regular writing workshop and then looked for vulnerable people within it. And then when he spotted this vulnerable guy who he invited over the phone to the writing workshop, and he spotted this vulnerable guy, and he's like, oh, I encourage you to, like, tell me your darkest fantasies. I'm a safe person. This is a safe relationship. I'm like your therapist. Just tell me your darkest fantasies. And it's like, I know you're not comfortable sharing them with everybody, because no one would be except for anonymously online, right? So you can still have the writing group and he can still know who this guy is face to face, but he would just be, it would just, the sex fantasies, the murder fantasies, the rape fantasies would just be something between the two of them, which is why he was extra betrayed. But the problem is, the that could have been the plot of this episode. But when we see the writer's group happening, the last story being read out in the group is another one about a gruesome murder.
Yeah.
Which means we're being asked to believe that this is a group of 10 men who get to together every week to talk about their murder fantasies. And that just can't happen. Can it?
Oh, I don't know. It could. I mean,
no, deep I know down men do this all the time. Okay, I know men do this all the time online. But again, it's just, it's a writing class in a community center utility room. Uh-huh. You know, multi-purpose room. There's no way these guys would be comfortable telling people who know their faces all about these horrific fantasies they have. I just can't buy that part.
Yeah. No, I know. The only problem is, But the only problem is if you have a regular writer's group, this guy is going to have to do double the homework.
But he's a serial killer. Of course he's willing to do double the homework.
Well, no, he's a potential serial killer.
Yeah. Oh, no, he had already killed people before he started up the writing group because they found out about the tongues.
No. I'm not talking about the guy who started up the writing group. Oh. I'm talking about the guy who's writing the fantasies for him.
Yes.
So you said that he would just write them separately for our serial killer.
Yeah.
Right? And what I'm saying is if this guy is part of the group, then he would have to do double the homework.
Well, oh, I see. So he would have a regular story and then he would have a twisted fantasy, his stalker fantasies.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't have a problem believing that because look at this guy. He's got nothing in his life except for his internal fantasy life of writing these stories. So I have no trouble believing this guy could write 10 stories in a week because all he does in his life is he stalks women and then he goes home and he writes about it. So it's like, this guy could have a regular short stories he writes and then his separate stalker fiction. And I would believe that from this character 100%.
Okay.
Who, by the way, is also able to break into a woman's house without anyone noticing. Well, a woman who gets thrown into a pool and then doesn't bother trying to swim at all. Like, I know her hands and feet are tied, but make an effort. You know, she, like, they do this underwater shot of her. She hasn't been drugged. She hasn't been clubbed. She just falls. Like, what are you doing, lady? He didn't attach a weight to you.
Yeah, well.
So let's get into, Spencer Reed shouldn't be in the field. I'm sorry, like, Hotch, Aaron, seriously, you need to take this guy out of the field. He talks a man into killing himself. And he does it on purpose. And he kind of admits that he did it on purpose.
Yeah.
Like, it's rough. And they gloss past it in a minute. He's like, yeah, I'm upset about what happened with Maeve and Dawn, so I just decided to do the wrong thing and see what happened. Well, then you can't be trusted in the field, can you? If you might just decide to do the wrong thing and see what happens.
And isn't that the sign of a potential serial killer?
It absolutely is. It's a 100% a warning time for potential serial killers.
This is a serious.
Yeah. Yep.
Breach, and they just slide over it. Like,
they blink past it in a second.
And I'm just like, do you guys not ever take this guy seriously?
No.
What is it?
I'll be honest with you. Is it the hair? It might be the hair.
No, but I'm sewing. No wonder he keeps insisting on being called Dr. Reed.
Yeah.
Team takes him seriously. Yeah.
It's true. But it's like they're still treating him like a child. I mean, part of that is he still does the Dr. Reed thing. He still dresses like a child. He's still very incredibly immature. But it's like, guys, you could help him. You know what would be the best thing to help Dr. Reed mature and become a real person? Stop covering for him. Stop letting him off the hook and treating him like a child who's not responsible for his actions. Like, he's bad at his job at this. I mean, he's been bad at his job for a while, but he's really bad at his job at this point. He got this man who had only attempted to kill someone. You might say, well, he killed that rapist and serial killer. Yeah, but who cares? That was so, like, he can easily claim that was self-defense.
Yeah, in Criminal Minds, who cares?
No, they let people get away with killing serial killers all the time. Yeah, frequently that happens, right? So don't tell me that they're going to be upset about that. He tried to drown this woman, but they saved her. Like, you can talk to him. If ever there was someone they could talk out of killing himself, it's this guy. He's clearly troubled. He doesn't want to be as sick as he is, and he's just been exploited by a monster. Like, of all of the killers in the history of the show, this is one of, like, the most sympathetic. I don't have any sympathy for his, you know, habit of his horrible fantasies, but the fact is, if this guy hadn't, had he never met and had he not been manipulated by a psychopath, he never would have hurt anybody.
Yeah.
There's every reason to believe he never would have killed anyone. So he not met this guy. And yet Reed is like, you're never going to get better. You might as well end it all.
Well, yeah, but that's just projection.
Of course it's projection.
This goes to our suicidal
theory. Yeah.
Our meta Reed theory that this is a, well, I mean,
at least passively suicidal.
At least passively suicidal. And this is where you get a statement that says that, you know, he's projecting I can't get any better. Well, yeah, well, why don't you go into friggin' therapy?
Why don't you try, Reed?
Yeah. Why don't you
That's the thing.
Try?
You claim that you can't get better, right? But you're not even willing to try. And this is exactly what he did to Anton Yelchin back.
And that was even worse.
That was even worse because it was a kid. All you have to tell him is, because, God, that I will never get over that scene where he tells him, you know, you just have to, you know, you just have to feel about it really hard and think about it really hard. No, you have to, admit you need help and get serious therapy starting now.
Yeah.
That's how you can stop this from getting worse. That's how you can stop from killing people. Get a lifetime of therapy and admit you need help and work at it. But Reed can never admit there's anything wrong with him.
Well, no. There's nothing wrong with his relationship with his mother.
You know, there's nothing. Again, that scene.
He's already forgotten that his mother murdered somebody.
Yep. He's just let that go.
Yeah.
No, but it's like it murdered someone specifically because that guy was a child, like set up someone to get murdered because he was a child molester. And they didn't deserve to live because he was a monster and monsters need to be slain. And that is the, you know, the world view that he still lives by.
Yeah.
And but there are dragons here. And that's exactly what he did here. Like, there is no, maybe Adam is more helpable. I was going to say, like, who's the most helpable guy they've ever encountered? It's either this guy or Adam.
Yeah.
Who's the most we can fix this person ever. And he goes to all that trouble to try and fix Adam, right? Too late, but, I mean, after they've already been caught. But this guy, he doesn't even try.
Well, it's because his whole world is falling apart internally.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to deal with the fact that his world is falling apart internally.
Well, and just the fact that they don't, I mean, I know, and the weird part is, I was about to say, I know you can't do the show without the character. Well, you know what? He was absent for half of seasons 12, 13, and 14, so apparently you can do the show without the character. But it's like, that is the biggest flaw of, and I mean, it creates a meta Aaron, right? It creates a meta Hotch, because realistically, if you care this much about your team, and you want to support your team this much, you should see that Spencer Reed can't be in the field, even if he can work. I mean, maybe you can let him sit in the office and work in the office and go over files and offer theories, but this man needs to be in serious therapy, and he absolutely can't be in the field.
Yeah.
And this episode proves it, and they come so close to admitting that, and then they immediately back off
because
they let him, as they always do, they let him get a bye with, no, I'll be fine, I'll work through this. You won't. and you never do. He never gets through this, and he only gets worse.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, such a fascinating character, though.
Yeah. It is, maybe, I mean, it's if there is one thing that's keeping me going throughout all of these episodes after we watch things that are so much better.
Yeah.
It's through the show is to see whether we're going to find more things that fit into this construction that we have.
And it turns out there are. My evidence of that, all of season. Sorry, no, I won't.
Come on. It's just you've just watched them.
I've just watched it, so it's fresh in my mind.
So it's all fresh in your mind, and you're not supposed to do that.
I know. It's hard not to, though. But yeah, no, I will admit that our development of Meta Reed, it's something that you pushed to start with.
Yeah.
And then as I got into the later seasons, I was like, oh my God, she's right.
Yeah.
She's completely right about this guy. All right. So let's move on to.
I thought you wanted to discuss Garcia's idiot.
Oh, right. Play. I'm sorry. You're right. I forgot. I totally forgot. Yeah. Garcia's the worst.
We don't have to do a fast thing. Garcia's the worst. Why she keeps Kevin around? Why?
She keeps Kevin dangling around. Oh, no. And the thing is, she would have... No, I'll tell you what happened. She would have tried to think... She broke Kevin's heart after screwing up his career because she should have just gotten over herself and married him, and she didn't, right? Gotten over her sick relationship with Derek and married Kevin, and she didn't. And she keeps dangling around, and she keeps... And you know what she's doing off camera. She is constantly like, I still want to be friends. I want to be helpful. I want to be supportive. Yeah. But she's definitely undercutting all of his relationships however she can.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And on some level, you understand that Kevin must think that it's because that he's got to know what she's doing and thinks that she must want them to get back together on some level.
Yeah.
And then to throw this in his face... And then act like, oh, well, there's nothing. So I'm dating people too. Yeah, well, he's only dating people, other people, because you said you're not capable of a serious relationship. That's the only reason he's doing all of this dating, Garcia, is because you said you're not available. And so for you to suddenly have a guy who you're really into out of nowhere that you never mentioned before, even though supposedly you're friends... Yeah, I think Kevin has a right to be betrayed because she's been screwing with him this whole time.
Yeah, and then I suppose it's supposed to be cute when she ends up playing the ukulele at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, but no. Give me a break.
No, you're terrible, Garcia. It's like, this has been our semi-regular check-in on Penelope Garcia. Terrible person.
Terrible, terrible person. Anyway, who needs therapy too? But never mind.
Oh, they all do. They all need therapy, and none of them get it.
Okay, so let's move on to. Yeah. Okay, and this is Restoration, and actually, in Jim Clemente and Janine Sherman Berois actually wrote this one. So,
yeah,
and it is well done.
A direct sequel.
It's a direct sequel.
There are problems, but it is a it is a direct sequel to Profile of Profile. So read the synopsis, then we'll get into it.
When three Chicago, Illinois men are beaten to death and found with their pants pulled down to their ankles.
I know.
The BAU attempts to identify a spree killer who sees his victims as child molesters. Meanwhile, Morgan becomes personally involved in the case after a major revelation forces him to confront his childhood abuser.
All right, so this is a fascinating episode for a bunch of reasons. First off, it's a direct sequel to Profile of Profile, an episode that is definitely in the running for the best episode of Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think we can safely say that. That said, for the stuff this episode does right, there is a bunch of troubling stuff in this episode. And so first off, let's just get to the easy stuff out of the way first. And that is this is the dumbest police investigation in history. There is no way this guy would have been able to serial kill. Because at the end of the episode, we find out that the first person who was killed, who was beaten to death, was a swim coach who had molested the son of a famous Chicago well-known criminal. Why did the cops not solve this 2 weeks ago?
Because
we need there to be an episode, but it's like, that's how they, but the thing is, they solve it by looking into all the victims. Oh, well, one of the victims, was a swim coach who had just molested the son of a well-known criminal. I'm like, did that not come up in the original investigation? That the guy was just publicly accused of molesting a famous criminal. I'm not going to say this guy's John Gotti, but here's the thing. When the guy who ran over John Gotti's son mysteriously disappeared, do you know what they didn't do? An extensive police investigation. Because they knew what happened. They weren't going to be able to prove it, but they knew what happened.
Yeah.
Okay? And in this case, it would not be hard to convict this guy. Like, this guy would have long ago been identified as the killer. So yeah, the idea that they had to call the FBI in at all for this one is ridiculous. Although there is actually a funny line in the episode where they're like, that's four victims in 3 weeks. This guy is, it's like, this is a really serious thing. And I'm like, less important that there are four guys in 3 weeks is the fact that there are three victims within a 24-hour period.
Mm-hmm.
That is far more significant. Like, and that's why this is a high priority. Not four victims in 3 weeks. Like, a guy could have 50 victims across 20 years, but if 10 of them are within 2 days, those are the ones we should be focusing on. You know? And that's the equivalent of what's happening here. This guy is just sprinting around the city, beating to death any man he sees touching a boy. To the point where I'm like, I don't know how there were no witnesses to this guy's crimes.
Yeah, because...
he doesn't care at all about being seen. You know? Yeah. Like, how are there no witnesses? He's just dragging people. He dragged a man out the back of a diner and beat him to death in the alley right behind the diner. Nobody saw that? And by the way, even if people had seen it, that wouldn't be a huge clue, because it's not like you can identify, as long as there's not a photograph of him.
Yeah.
Eyewitness testimony isn't that useful. So, like, they could have focused up this man's, like, recklessness by having there be witnesses, but that not really helping.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's get into the good stuff about this episode. It really maturely looks at by showing us a ton of Carl Buford's other victims.
Yeah.
And the fact that it maturely says that some of them are completely destroyed by this, but then there's the kid who's now a college football star. And
there's Morgan.
And there's Morgan. He got out of it. But the kid who's a college football star, who's such, like, it's such a tragic story because he's working his way through it. But it's like he's working his way through it via denial. And he's outwardly successful, but he can't talk to anybody about it. And you wonder, like, what's going to happen to this kid? Like, let's say he manages to have a successful football career. What's going to happen to him the minute that success is gone?
Yeah.
Like, because he is dealing with this by constantly working forward towards something bigger.
Yeah.
And what if he breaks his leg, right? What if he can't play football anymore and he doesn't have anything to work for towards anymore? Well, is he going to completely collapse? Like, and that's why I was so happy where at the end of the episode, we check in on him and we realize that Buford, like all of the victims not going public, but like this man's crimes becoming a matter of public record.
Yeah.
Right. In some way, like, maybe it can get this guy the help he needs. And it's such a nice, because it's like, you wonder, well, if this guy's not going to help them find the guy, because Derek just goes and visits him once, and he doesn't help them, and then they just leave the character. And it's like, you wonder, well, what are they trying to say with that? And then you get to the end of the episode, and you're like, no, everybody hurts, and everybody deals in their own way.
Yeah.
It's a really mature look at it, and I think very well done.
Well, I'll tell you, I have one problem with this.
Please.
Okay. What do we call Morgan?
Oof.
The poster boy for toxic masculinity.
He is.
And the problem is, right, that this does not ring for me as real,
the first one.
As profile, because I'm going, but Morgan hasn't changed anything. And we're going to find when we, you know, when we get to the, when they are forced
his,
into there.
His, yeah, when he does his relationship stuff.
And we have, the sexual harassment stuff.
Oh, God.
You know, that when they're forced into the class.
Yeah.
You're right. That was the horrible thing because I thought, what I really thought was Buford was beautifully acted.
Yep.
That was, if there was a tour de force performance in this
episode. He was fantastic the first time, and he's even better this time.
And just such a total slime. And when he says, yeah, but there are more of me.
Yeah.
He refuses, and of course he breaks his promise, and then Morgan makes sure that he gets killed. I have no
sympathy
about that.
But here's my question to you, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna use a thing. And this is my problem. I was about to thank you for bringing it up, because I was about to bring up my biggest problem with the episode, right? So I'm going to quote, well, paraphrase, the first episode of Justified. Mm-hmm. Because, first off, if you haven't watched Justified, we've talked about it a lot. It's a perfect TV show in a lot of ways. Everybody needs to watch Justified. But there's a great moment, and I always say that Justified's pilot is one of the best pilots I've ever seen in my life. Like, I've never seen a better pilot of television, a better first episode that makes you want to keep living in this world and finding out more about these characters. Justified is incredible. All right, so in the first episode, there's a central moment for understanding the main character, which is, in the beginning of the episode, he has told a man, he works in Miami, a murderer who has never been charged with his crimes, who's not a wanted criminal, he has said, get out of town in 24 hours. Right? Or I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to shoot you dead. And we meet him when the 24 hours are up, and he goes to a restaurant, and he confronts the guy, and the guy pulls a gun on him and he shoots him. And it's just a beautiful scene. You're like, wow, I can't believe I just watched that. Television's fantastic. But what's key is, and this is what we are left with trying to figure out who that character is. Because what he reveals to us at the end of the episode is he honestly doesn't know, like, because the guy had a gun and he figured he had a gun because he's a murderer, right? And he's just, the guy's never unarmed. So he figured he would be able to get away with this murder. And what he says is that he honestly doesn't know that if the man had been unarmed, he wouldn't have shot him anyway.
Yeah.
And that is this fundamental violence and anger at the core of the character.
Yeah.
And here's why this episode betrays Derek Morgan. For no reason, Carl Buford, he writes out a list. Carl Buford doesn't know who the killer is.
No.
He doesn't. He knows that it's one of his boys because of the message, but he doesn't know who the killer is. Right? But for no reason at all, when he is writing the list of all of his victims for Derek, right? he leaves off the killer's name. For no reason. Except, well, no, there is one reason. The reason is to give the character Derek Morgan a pass for killing Carl Buford.
Yeah.
That's the only reason they have the character do that.
Yeah.
And that pisses me off so much, because just like I was saying about Raylan Givens Unjustified, imagine if Carl Buford kept his word and mm-hmm. gave them the whole list and they figure out who the killer was. And then looking at the totality of Carl's crimes and all of the men he's destroyed. Then having Derek Morgan say, what is a promise to this man worth?
Yeah.
And just not keeping his promise anyway.
Yeah.
That would have been so powerful.
Yeah. And you would have
always want to let the character off the hook.
Yeah. And we would have been sitting here. We would have been sitting here. Okay. Going, okay, this is another step in Morgan's journey.
Yes.
That Morgan is starting to understand that he can differentiate himself from Carl Buford.
Yep.
And that he can walk away from him and he can see him as something other than the man who abused him. Because that's, if that had been there and Morgan had made that decision,
yeah,
right, then you could say, then he is seeing Carl Buford like every other pedophile that he has to deal with.
Yeah.
And that
it would have been such a way for the character to mature. Yeah.
Whereas we're left with me going, yeah, but he's still the poster boy for toxic.
I know he is.
He hasn't come. He hasn't. And they, yes. And as you say, letting him off the hook, not making the tough decision.
No.
It's, we have to make it easy for these characters and, not let them grow up. I guess that's exactly what the writers of these shows, they don't want these characters to ever grow up.
Grow or change. No. That's why Reed still has this ridiculous haircut in season 8.
Yeah.
They're archetypes.
It's an interesting thing to think, you know, what is it? I don't know. I mean, I sit there and I wonder, do you not want to change? Do you not want to grow? It gets to, you know, to me, it's funny because I think, is that part of the zeitgeist almost of the society as a whole? That because you go, I mean, right now, you know, you can't, you see all of this screaming and hollering at everybody for stuff they've done in the past, right?
Yeah.
They've done something 40 years ago mm-hmm. or 30 years ago, and then they've never done it again. Or they've changed, they've grown up, they've realized the error, or when they, you know, and they realize that they made what they thought was a good decision at the time. Turned out that the law of unintended consequences, that you didn't think this through well enough at the time, and now you have to pay a price, and now you've got a bigger you've got another problem to fix, and that happens all the time, and we do change and we do get better, people do, and yet this show constantly seems to pull back from ever giving these characters any moments to grow and change. If I was the same person I was 40 years ago, I'd be making a hell of a lot of stupid decisions.
Absolutely. Well, no, and I mean, that's,
you know.
Yeah, obviously, right? But
learn from your mistakes.
Exactly. And I think that's what bothers me when people, like, cancel culture is a thing where it's like, you know, like, these people used to have really shitty opinions. Why are we still letting them be a part of culture, right? Why are we letting them run things? But the thing is, you get into this complicated situation where when someone sexually assaults people and harasses people, I don't care when they did it. Yeah, they should go away. I completely agree with that. But when you get into people who had bad opinions in the past, I really feel like we have to allow people to a chance to change their minds.
Yeah.
And to grow. I really believe that. But at the same time, you can't, I think that you have to be able to, like, show me that you've changed your mind. Like, right now, we're going through this ridiculous thing in Canada, where Andrew Scheer, the president of the Conservatives,
Okay, go on.
Oh my God, the president, the leader of the Conservative Party. I'm sorry. I said president instead of leader. The leader of the Conservative Party wants to be prime minister. There's no nice way to say this. He spent the entire 90s and early 2000s saying unforgivably awful things about homosexuals. Horrific stuff about basically their central immorality. He is a fundamentalist Christian in opposition to gay people in the worst possible way. That is what he spent decades doing. He co-signed horrible bills to take away the rights of gay people. Like, he's done monstrous stuff in the past. And so now, because he wants to be prime minister, that's all coming up. And over again, I see people defending him and saying, it was 20 years ago, it was 10 years ago, it was 8 years ago. Can't people get better? Can't people change? But what I haven't seen from Andrew Scheer, who by the time this episode airs, might be prime minister of Canada. Wrap your head around that one. But I've seen no evidence that he has changed his opinions. I know he doesn't say it in public, and I know he doesn't try to pass laws hurting gay people, but I haven't seen no evidence that his opinions have changed or his feelings have changed. And the fact is, his homophobia and hatred of gay people was always the problem, not just the specific actions he took that were motivated by that. Yeah. See what I'm saying?
No.
And here, we get the situation where, like, they're just not giving a chance to grow at all. Because I don't want to just be told that people are growing and changing. I want to see evidence in their actions that they're growing and changing.
Yeah, well, it's called, we used to do this, like, theologically, when we were starting to deal with issues of domestic violence in Christianity, well,
right.
Dealing with it, people have a really hard time
admitting God, it exists.
Well, I mean, because for the same reason that Scheer, right, his these biblical things, you know, women and homosexuality, you can kind of go, okay, it's really Old Testament and it's not really like New Testament. You really can't pull too much out in the New Testament.
You can't pull anything out of the New Testament to be against gay people.
There's a couple of verses in Paul that you kind of, but
kind of get there. Yeah.
No, that people can kind of work with, but
yeah,
but it's pretty hard. Like, they're easier to put down than the, a man shall not lie with a man.
No, there is a pre, right? I'm not delusional. I've read the Bible. There is a clear admonition against it in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
But,
these
aren't Old Testament people.
No. But what I'm going to say is, so then when we're starting the domestic violence stuff, because those who are in that particular fundamentalist strain of one sort or another, or even other Christian strains, have to figure out, okay, but we have to argue this theologically. And so the idea, and it is to use, you have this term, because you can't just say forgiveness, and that's the problem. There is the term metanoia. The problem is that metanoia means you have to turn around, basically. In other words, the argument becomes, you can't just say I'm sorry, you have to change.
Yes.
You have to change your life, you have to whatever. And then the question becomes, so that's the metanoia. Okay. So therefore, then you give a woman a theological justification for walking out on her husband if he's beating the shit out of her.
Yeah.
Okay.
If he apologizes and says he won't do it, and then he goes back to doing it,
three months.
Then you can leave him.
Yeah.
He has proven he is not committed. He has not changed in his heart. He was not sorry in his heart. He has not changed his heart, or else he would have stopped.
Yes. And it doesn't matter that he's, never mind. I'm not even going to go there. But the point is, but the point of all of that is, what you need is to see change. It, you have to do it, not just say it.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's part of it, And then of course, the whole cultural thing. Yeah. Well, people get, the one thing that we always have to understand about people is that they get dragged into, like, people, and it isn't okay. What's the bottom line code is that you don't hurt other people any more than necessary.
Yeah. Minimum necessary force to protect yourself, to protect others, or even to protect that person.
Yeah. You know,
that is the use of force that morality allows for.
Well, it should.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's really interesting talking sometimes to some of these guys who have got out of the white supremacist movement.
Yeah.
You know, there's the odd one, like there's one out in Quebec, you know, who has just, it's like this, and he can explain, he will explain exactly how he got his life, everything else, and these group of people suck him in, and then you just a little bit and a little bit. It's like all predatory behavior. It's a little bit and a little bit. So now he's out, and he says so, and he's doing right.
Yeah.
So yeah. So then you say, okay, what you said in the past has no bearing on who you are now,
because you've proven to me that you're willing to put in the work to make up for what you did in the past.
Yeah.
And, are you willing to put in the work? And that's, and I think you're right that that's fundamentally, this is an episode that has all of the right opinions and demonstrates important stuff.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, you're right. It's undercut because Derek's not willing to put into the work. Not willing to put in the work to the point where this episode literally ends in a moment that is horrifying in its implications. And that is, Derek has just installed some shutters in a house he is renovating, and he opens them up, and light shines on him, and he is reborn in the light of the Lord. Because the show wants us to believe at the last moment, right? After we've seen all of these shattered men, it wants us to believe at the last moment, oh, well, Carl Buford's dead now, so Derek's fine.
Yeah.
But that's not how it works.
No, it's not how it works. As I said, I'm glad to see you're coming around to my point of view that this episode isn't quite as good because it
does. No, it's not. I'm just saying, you're right that this episode has a ton of problems and a very serious problem right there at the end. But I think that it was so, that it is so touching in the way it handles the football star and the meth addict and the guy who became a drug dealer.
Yeah.
Like, I think that is an important visualization.
And the good thing is the cop. That was all the good part of that of that episode of his.
The
saying,
cop just. I mean, is it a little?
I never thought.
Oh God! The moment where the cop has to say that he never thought about the lives, like, because he sees all these. Let's face it, black kids committing crimes who are teens, and he never, and he just, on some level, he has these racist assumptions that that's just their culture and they're just poor. No, these kids are abuse victims, and that's what it turns them into, and this is one of the things that can happen. And the cop has to face up to that, and that's such a good part of the episode.
He does a good job of facing up to that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yes, the episode undercuts everything by the episode undercuts everything by letting Derek off the hook.
Yeah.
And not having him actually kill Carl Buford.
And not actually, and not having
And then the show screws it up by not having Derek be matured by this experience any more than he was by confronting Carl and putting Carl in jail back in season 2.
Yeah.
Okay. This one took a lot out of us. Yeah, there's a lot to this episode.
There was, no, this episode, like, it had, again, as I said, Profiler Profiled is, I don't think one. I had, did I have I mean, too much to back. Say about that?
You can
I don't
go back know. And, well, no, we talked a lot about it, but yeah. only because of all the stuff it did right. You can go back and listen to that episode if you want. I haven't gone back and checked. We did that back in February, but I have to assume we were confident that it was one of the best episodes the show had ever done.
Up to that point, and even
up to that point,
even since, I don't know that there's. It was a whole really, really, really good episode.
Absolutely,
it was dead on. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing about this is, then I'm going. Okay, so Jim Clemente hasn't dealt with his demons yet either.
Nope.
Because he's involved in this. So he's dealt with some of his demons, clearly.
Not all.
But not all of them. Because this is allowed. No, it isn't the episode that Profiler Profiled was. And I'm only relating this to sort of the Morgan character, right?
Yeah.
Because Shamar Moore does a brilliant job in Profiler Profiled. Yeah. Here, he's not given as much to work with. It's not as good. No. And as you say, your fix is there's no reason why Buford, if you had Morgan had to make a moral decision.
Yes.
About making
whether
this
or
public.
Not.
Yeah.
And it's like, because the thing is, and what it comes down to is my word to an evil man worth more than the lives I could help
by
making his abuse public.
Public, yes.
And like, that's and what it comes down to.
And but it is still like, now I'll sort of back and go, it is still a powerful scene.
Yes, it is.
Like, if you take it out of the episode, that scene is so powerful in its potential.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the reason he did it, and he does make the decision to do it. Right. And then that gets.
But it's undercut by the fact that it lets Derek off the hook.
Because.
It's not a hard decision to make because they have Buford lie for no betray Derek for no reason.
Yeah. And the thing is that if we had seen sort of that scene, you know, you go, everybody, well, you don't have to do this, Dick. Morgan, and Morgan just says, well, yes, Derek says, yes, I do.
Yeah.
Right. But you don't, you know, you don't have, because you still feel like he did this as a reaction to Buford.
Yes.
That Buford is still controlling him.
Absolutely.
And I don't think people really understand that the abuser can have such control. That even when you do the right thing, you are doing it because.
Yeah.
It's to do this. And yeah, the show gives him a reason to do this, and he didn't need a reason to do this. And so, yeah, I mean, it's
so much more powerful. You can agree with me
that
if he did
it would have been
so much more powerful. Had Buford not lied, and he has to just do the Talmudic,
yeah.
you know, weighing yes. the cost. What is my word worth if it's going to hurt all of these people to keep silent?
But I don't think anybody in the show is intelligent enough to come up with
that. That's funny, right? Because you watch it and you're just like, because he sees.
And then
like,
that would
it
have
been such a good payoff because he sees all of these people who are shattered who could have been helped if he hadn't kept it a secret.
Yeah.
He could have been helping these people all this time. This maybe never would have happened, any of it. If he hadn't kept it a secret. And I'm not saying it is entirely his moral obligation, but he should say that keeping it, like, that would get him to the moral place where he can say, it's not worth my word, my honor isn't worth keeping this a secret anymore. It isn't worth the damage that will be done by keeping it a secret. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they almost had an amazing episode.
Yeah, they almost had it, because if they had done just that, right? Yeah.
made the single, and it literally, the single change, which is Buford leaves the killer's name off the list.
Yeah.
If they had just left that one thing out.
Yeah.
And, damn and, this episode.
Yeah. It would have been as, it would have been pushing up there with Profiler Profile, and you would have ignored sort of some of the, because as I said, the cop, the scene with the cop, like all of that is so good.
Powerful.
It's powerful.
It's powerful.
You know, and it could have been just, it just one little tweak would have meant that you would have walked away from this entire episode at the end.
Yeah.
With the same feeling that you had from Profiler Profiled.
That is absolutely right.
You know,
you were totally dead on about this. Like, you would have had that same.
Yeah.
I respect them so much for telling this important story in such a strong way.
Because they get it so right. Like, it is just so, you know, right. Like, you know, yeah. And as you say, you know, then you would have ignored the fact that, well, they should have caught him right away. Right?
Yeah, no, I would have ignored all that stuff. If they had just, if they had just let Morgan. Right.
Make
that decision. Yes.
A real decision, not a phony decision based on anger.
Anger. And again, but again, like Buford just let him kill him by betraying him one more time. No. What if Buford was played straight with Derek and then Derek actually has to make a moral decision?
Yeah.
That's a stronger episode.
Yeah, that's a stronger episode. That's a stronger because it is a decision that we all have to make.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the time in our lives about different issues, you know? Mm-hmm. Ultimately, because people don't, because in real life, people don't let you off the hook.
No.
And
the way Derek always gets left off the hook.
Yeah, the way everybody in this
universe, this world.
Yeah, in this world gets let off the hook either by making their decisions easier.
Yep. Either by the creators making their decisions easier, or by the actual characters on the show just covering up for them.
Yeah, the other characters. And I always say it, nothing worse than secrets.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I will always go back to the death of the death of the Reaper.
Yeah.
Right? Where at some point that man was unconscious and he could have stopped hitting him. And I'm not saying he wasn't right to kill the Reaper, okay? But the fact that he gets the entirety of the FBI is a 100% down to say he did nothing wrong. That's the problem with that scene.
Yeah.
I believe that Hotch beats that man to death.
Yeah, he did.
No, but I'm saying I have no reason to believe that everything we know about that character, of course he would. Yes. But it's all of the characters around him that sign off on it. Yeah. That's the problem. And I can understand them not having a moral problem with his actions, but it's, you have to be above, like, if this is your job, you have to be willing to put yourself above just what feels right in the gut and what you think morally is okay. Your job is bigger than that. And he's an FBI agent.
There has to be somehow or another, some kind of a price. And, I bring up something.
Of course, please. Before we go, we've kept people here for an hour and a half to talk a lot about Derek Morgan. So please jump in one more thing.
No, here. It's FBI related, of course.
Okay.
Right. And it's just when you say letting people off the hook and right. And I'm looking at, okay, so James Comey, right. So just a sec. So the thing came out, right. And it said,
the investigation of whether he was a leaker. Yeah.
Yeah. And he didn't leak confidential information.
Nope.
However, he did. There is policy, you know, which is not the same thing. Right. So
there's policy and there's crime.
Yeah. And so he didn't commit a crime. Right. Yeah. But I was listening to the Democratic, one of the commentators who's a Democrat on some, I don't know,
whatever news show.
Probably Aaron Burnett.
Yeah.
Up front. And anyway, and it doesn't matter which
one. It doesn't matter who it was. Get to the point of the story.
The point of the story is he says, wait a sec. I don't care. You can't let him, like, it's not, he says, but James Comey is not a saint in all of this. Just because it's Trump, he's not a saint. Remember what he did to Hillary.
Yep.
And he said, you cannot forget that. You know, you can't let, and he, I think he even said, you can't let him off the hook for that. He said he had parallel investigations going, and the only one he talked about was the one on Hillary. Then he brought up this business 3 days before the election. You know, he's opened this investigation and doesn't
reopen the email investigation. Trump is actively being investigated for counterintelligence stuff with the Russians. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, anyway, it's just the letting off the hook business, right?
No, I agree.
You know, it was everybody else was kind of, you know, and then he just said, wait a sec.
No, I know.
Wait a minute.
That being said, you know, I have a lot of sympathy for James Comey in the Hillary thing, but it's for very complicated reasons that we're not going to get into now.
Well, it is. He was between a rock and a hard place.
Let's just say he was being blackmailed by the FBI, by the New York office of the FBI, who is a ridiculous pro-Trump organization. And that's all we'll say about that.
Yeah, well, we're not going to go into all of that.
No, that's for another time.
I'm sure there'll be something in Criminal Minds that will bring that up.
Wouldn't surprise me. No, but you're right. Like, you can't just let them off the hook just because you're on their side. That's the thing.
Yeah,
just because he hates Trump as much as most of America does, doesn't mean you give him a pass for the unethical stuff he's done in the past.
Yeah. You always have to moderate your opinions. It's this business of constantly going, saying, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Have you changed? Do you understand what you did wrong and why you did it? And are you going to change? And I think, I mean, he did say that he, you know, when he showed his friend the memos, he damn well knew that his friend
would go to the press with him, of course.
Yeah, because that was the whole purpose of.
That's why he showed him.
Yeah,
I mean, he didn't tell his friend to show them, but he knew what was going to happen. He's not an idiot.
And his friend also knew. Like, this is one of those unsaid things. But anyway,
it ties in perfectly because it's within that milieu of you have to have people take responsibility. And when they do a morally questionable thing, we're allowed to ask why they did it, but you have to suffer the consequences of your actions.
Yeah.
Even if you had good reasons, unless you're a character on Criminal Minds.
Or you're the president of the United States.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other whole thing.
Anyway, we're not going to talk about that. But in Criminal Minds, like, it's just the only reason we talk about it is it still goes to my question of what is the ethical thing here? I mean, I was going to.
What is the ethical worldview of Criminal Minds? Yeah.
I was going to do another Scientology drive-by when we were, I think it was doing the carbon copy? I can't remember which episode, not the Derek one, but one of the other two episodes I was going to do.
Probably the therapy one, I would guess.
The therapy one. And I'm going, but maybe this is how they get clear, right? I can't help it.
By writing out all their murder fantasies. Yes. Maybe that's how they get clear.
Okay. Rid of the negative engrams. Teaching history.
That is going to be a perfect time to wrap it up. Once we hit the Scientology talk, we know we've gone on too long. So if you made it to the end, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. What are we going to be doing next week? What is the people's homework if they're watching along with us?
Okay. Pay it forward.
Which one is pay it forward?
When a retired Colorado police deputy's decapitated corpse is found hours after a severed head is discovered.
Oh, okay. Got it. Next up?
Yep. Okay. And next up is alchemy.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to be fun.
Oh, good old Reed will be. Anyway.
Yeah.
And then Nanny Dearest.
Oh, okay. That's, Oof. That's one we're definitely going to talk about. That's going to be one of the first things in my ongoing series of comments you'll hear me making for the next few years of this episodes, which is, I feel like dogs could have solved this crime. There are so many crimes in this show where if they had just, like, brought a sniffer dog and followed somebody back, they'd be like, oh, well, he did it. Okay, done.
Anyway, done. Okay.
Dog wrapped this up pretty nicely. Okay. But yes, I'm not saying they're as dumb as dogs. I'm saying, literally, bring dogs to help you solve crimes. They're surprisingly good at it. All right, so I guess that's that. We will, yes, we'll be back here for episodes 819 to 821. We're going to be back next next Thursday for that. We just did the Mindhunter episodes, so I'm still in that headspace. Yeah. I apologize.
We have no
for
bonus
my confusion.
Episodes this
season. No bonus episodes right now that we know of. The weird part is, because we record these so far in advance, there could be like an important, this is going to air, who the hell knows when. I haven't done the math, but probably in 2020. So there is a slight chance that while you're listening to this, a new hot new profiling related TV show is on television and we're talking about it on Tuesdays as well. So I guess what we're saying is, don't just check your feed on Thursdays. Sometimes there's bonus episodes.
Yeah.
The point really though is, if you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, if you have any suggestions for profiling related fiction you think we should check out, please drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. And if you're listening to this on any kind of a podcasting app, be sure to give us a review, because again, we like to know what people think of us, and reviews help new viewers find the show. So until next time, as always, I want to thank you for watching and say au revoir.
And see you next Thursday.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.